But when you start speaking to me, you'll notice that I am someone that is very driven, ambitious. I like to push the norm and the standards and create something new.
Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming Lucienne Leclay as a product manager with over 6 years of experience in the fintech industry.
When you start working for the first time, the people that you work with predominantly defines your career. I started my career in the Netherlands. I am very, very direct. They always compare my way of communicating with the Dutch standards. Aruban people are not very direct. If something is blue, you don't tell that person that the thing is blue.
Lucienne has been instrumental in driving digital innovation at Aruba Investment Bank.
Stay feisty, stay with your attitude. A lot of companies actually want divas because the divas are the ones that set the standard for a project.
People, welcome to the Sunside Kingdom Show. Welcome, Lucienne.
Thank you, and beautiful introduction. Oh my God. I was telling you that I didn't have like the moment to reflect, but this was like so beautiful. Makes me appreciate myself.
I can't take all the credit for it because behind the scenes we have persons that help us with some of the script writing and does the immaculate research. So thanks to behind the scenes as well. Awesome. So how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us, because the interview kind of happened Caribbean style, right?
Si.
Last minute, quick, like, hey, we're here. Are you up for an interview?
Exactly. But we're up for anything and spontaneous things. So yeah, I'm grateful. Yeah. And,
but I did get that energy from your online presence. I was like, I think she'll be down.
See, no,
she
exactly.
Seems like the one that would jump at opportunities.
literally. So yeah, I'm happy. Thank you.
So let's dive into who is Lucienne in 2025, in your career, in some of, what keeps you busy in these days?
So as you mentioned, I work at IEB. But outside of work is who I identify myself most as, and that is a community driver and also a teacher at the University of Aruba. Mm-hmm. So these days, when people tell me, okay, so Lucienne, how are you? Like, what are you up to? Everyone that asks me that, I'm like, I'm just working, because work is, they say you don't really have to identify yourself with your work, mm-hmm. but I do identify myself as with my work. Mm-hmm. It's because I'm doing what I love, and it is, like I mentioned, driving a community and making a change on the island of, like you mentioned very beautifully, not only for Aruba to be completely dependent on the tourism industry, but also maybe have technology as another pillar for the economy of Aruba, or as a supporting factor for another industry, such as agriculture and those type of things.
Yeah.
And aside that, like I mentioned, I give classes recently at the University of Aruba. I started in January. I give software.
So how often do you give those classes?
See, so on Monday I give classes, and Monday is from 8 to 10, and then Wednesday 12:30 to 2:30.
Okay.
So, and in June, we're going to finalize in the beginning of June. So it's almost the end of the semester and my first year of teaching. So that's like a moment that I'm like, oh my God, whoa, you know? So so that's basically who I am, Lucienne Leclay, a woman that just works and loves what she does and wants to make an impact, wants to follow her passion, and just want to be kind and, just give back as much as she can while also making money, because, of course, we all love a little bit. No one can lie. No one can lie. We love making money as well. Yeah, so, finding the balance in life, what makes you happy and how, like, what's your purpose in it as well.
Interruption. I want to send a special shout out to Jadimir and Sharitza for allowing us to use their crib to shoot this episode. Thank you very much. Shout out. Future spot on Airbnb. Beautiful house. Oh, so you actually just touched on one of my next questions. So
purpose. So passion, purpose. Because you mentioned that today you're very passionate about what you do. A lot of that passion also pours into what you do outside of your 9-to-5, so to speak. And on the topic of purpose, how would you say, how well do you feel connected to your purpose in everything that you do? And what do you believe that is?
See, so this is actually a very deep question, because lately I've been going through certain stuff that has me feeling, what is actually my purpose? For example, I think maybe 3 weeks ago, we had a WIP event, our first online WIP event, because before we had 3 WIP events. Which is a tech community, you mentioned it, but just for everyone to know. We had 3 WIP events locally, but we had one online event. And after that event, I was like, okay.
So why was it online?
Because we want to target the international and local people on the island and make them connect with each other.
So the diaspora of Aruba,
Exactly, because there's a lot of Arubans living abroad that do not know what's happening on the market of Aruba. So we want to make that connection, and as well as Aruban people wanting to get more knowledge abroad and from the other people that are working in other industries, such as the health industry or the education industry, is what we get the most within our RIB community. And just share knowledge and see if there's any opportunities for projects as well, because one of our pillars is... one of our key instruments is as well finding companies to export the tech skills that we have on the platform. So, but after that online event, I felt a little bit like, what is my purpose? Why am I doing this? What makes me actually happy? So, and...
found any answers to those questions? Oof,
I'm still in the phase of figuring it out. But for sure, I want to keep doing what I love, and that is making an impact with my work, and making an impact with who I am as a person. Because when you first meet me, you will think that, oh, maybe she's a little bit more standoffish, or she is very strict, etc. But when you start speaking to me, you'll notice that I am someone that is very driven, ambitious, and I like to push the norm and the standards and create something new. So in everything I do, I want those three things, and passion as well, those four things to come in. So what is exactly my purpose in life? I do not know, but I want those four key instruments to be in it for sure.
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned that purpose-wise, you haven't fully figured it out. And that's fine, because as you go through life and have these different experiences, you're going to slowly discover it. Or at least if you're looking for it, then I do believe you'll slowly discover it. Because there are also those that they're kind of oblivious, and they're not really looking for what their purpose is, and they're just going through the days and going through the motions. But it's already good that you have defined what criteria should be part of that purpose.
But you know, like, now that you're talking, and I'm remembering, so I'm very big in believing my intuition and following my intuition. So there was poof, I think when I was 14 or 15 or something, I had like 2 major callings. And one of the callings was that I'm going to have a very big impact on the community. Whether it was the community of Aruba or another community, I don't know. Right now, I strongly believe it's having an impact in the Caribbean community, because I really feel attached to it. And the other calling that I had, which came through, was that, and I actually wrote a LinkedIn post about it, was that I had a calling that I'm going to teach. And never in my life, literally, and now I'm a teacher at the university, for real. And never in my life, I started to become a teacher, or I did, maybe at the HBO, I did like giving courses aside of work, but aside of school, but I never really took it seriously. But when I was asked to become a teacher, I was like, oh, whoa. And it reminded me of that time I had that calling. So maybe it's not that I don't have a purpose.
That you haven't figured it out.
But I do feel like that is guiding me though.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that everything I do is with those four key instruments. Passion-driven, ambitious, and what else did I say? Like very, like a go-getter. I don't remember what I said. But everything include those four pillars together is guiding me towards having an impact on the community.
Yeah.
And I do believe it's with technology. How? I have no idea yet. And that's why we're called WIP, no? Work in progress.
Work in progress. Yeah,
because
yeah,
we don't
yeah.
know. Because when people hear me say, oh my God, yeah, I want to create a new economical pillar for Aruba. Everyone's looking at me like, Lucia. And sometimes I do think I'm crazy. But you know, it is feasible.
You know what's funny? I'm on vacation this time. So wife and kids are here. Well, I think by now most people know that my wife is from Aruba. That's included in almost every presentation. And we have the wedding picture when I was still a few pounds lighter. But she brought me to one of these heritage presentations mm-hmm. like that they do for the tourists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was in it's Fort Zoutman, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Fort Zoutman, and they were explaining how Aruba has gone through these different transitions mm-hmm. throughout history. So I think one was at some point they were the biggest exporters of aloe.
Mm-hmm. And
was that like on one of the highest levels uh-huh. in the world?
Uh-huh.
And then at some other point, I forgot what the mineral was or it was something that they found in the ground.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
What was that? Phosphate. Anyways, I don't know. I've heard of it, but okay.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so then
is
they
it
became.
Wood? I don't know.
They became really big in that uh-huh. as well on the export side, and then in the 1930s it was the oil industry.
Yes.
So between Aruba and Curaçao, that became pretty huge, mm-hmm. and that also mm-hmm. attracted many. Persons from mm-hmm. different islands, etc. That also actually attracted my mm-hmm. grandfather and grandmother. So mm-hmm. and that caused my mom to be born mm-hmm. in Aruba.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted till about the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point is when that industry kind of started to reach its breaking mm-hmm. tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And then is when they introduced tourism.
Yes, yes.
So actually, when you look at the 80s going back to the 30s, mm-hmm. that's about a 50-year-ish period.
Mm-hmm.
And now from
mm-hmm.
the 80s to mm-hmm. where we're at now, we're at mm-hmm. about a 40-year-ish
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be ripe within the next years for for a new pillar to emerge.
Mm-hmm. The story that you just mentioned is actually beautiful because that's how we created our vision as well.
Mm.
So before we created our vision, of course, we had like talks with different stakeholders, people in my community, my environment, etc. And we came across one person, and this person is a journalist,
mm-hmm.
And she loves doing research on the history of Aruba. And she was telling me about how Aruba had like this export economy before it became an tourism industry, tourism
yeah.
economy. And when she told me that, something in me triggered. I was like, okay, I want to build a tech community. I myself in that moment was feeling like, okay, I have so much to give the whole world. The world is your oyster.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I export my services? So our whole story of our vision of, you know, Aruba creating a new economical pillar by means of outsourcing technology services is based on Aruba having a export economy at the beginning.
Mm.
So we want to bring that back. And it's not that we want to make it the main economical pillar at the moment. We appreciate and we love tourism because everyone that is working on Aruba
yeah.
is making a lot of money on tourism, especially if you're building from ground up.
Mm-hmm.
In the hotel industry, you can grow very easily. So it's not that we want to replace it, but we want to create a second.
Yeah.
Or as I mentioned, at least
a supporting factor yeah.
for either tourism or something else. Like, for example, for tourism, what you can do with technology. I've spoken about this a few times, and I've heard someone speaking about it as well, is for example, the beaches. Mm-hmm. What you can do is you can implement sensors around mm-hmm. the beaches and identify when the beach is very busy or not very busy. So it's something very, very simple,
yeah.
but does make an impact. And it doesn't have to be the beaches only. It can be at other places where you can just have it within your application and you monitor where to go, where is the least busy.
Yeah.
Instead of driving around, like on a Sunday, it's a beach day. So everyone yeah. drives around and searches for like the least busy beach.
But you so can just go and also make uh-huh. things a bit more sustainable, see, less exactly. CO2 emissions.
Uh-huh, literally. So it's such like minor differences that we would want to make if it's a supporting factor, but of course, like, we have to really sit down and start doing research on it. So that is yeah. our next step. So yeah, so that's why I really loved your story, because that's how our vision was formed. It was because we were an export economy, and how do we go back to being an export economy?
Yeah, awesome.
So yeah.
So let's rewind. Well, we rewind the clock on Aruba. Uh-huh. So let's rewind the clock on Lucien.
Uh-huh.
So where was little Lucien born?
I was born actually in Rotterdam, the Netherlands.
Oh, wow. See,
and then when I was four, my parents...
So your parents were studying in uh-huh. the Netherlands. They were studying or they were working at the time?
My mother went to study mm-hmm. and afterwards she worked, and my father just worked in the okay. Netherlands. Yeah. So, and I was born there 4 years of age. We moved back to the island. And then I think when I was 20 or 19, mm-hmm. I went back to the Netherlands
okay.
to study and work as well.
Yeah. So you mm-hmm. did high school here in Aruba.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. what did you mm-hmm. have?
So I did MAVO first mm-hmm. In Filomena Colegio MAVO. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards I went to APE. I'm not sure if you know those.
No. What is APE?
APE is an MBO.
Okay.
Uh-huh, it's an yeah. MBO. I went to MBO and then I went to HBO.
You went to HBO in Holland.
Uh-huh, in Holland. Okay. Yes. Okay, yes. Nice. So after MAVO, I went to...
So what did you study in APE?
Uh-huh, so that's the financial... I don't know what it's called again, like finance something, okay. Finance and economy, yeah. So something, finance and accounting, something like that.
So what did you learn there, like more accountancy stuff or economics?
Yeah, uh-huh, see, more accounting for sure. Okay. And I always thought, because like on the islands, I don't know how you experience it, but on the islands, it's always like either you become an accountant or you work in hospitality, or it's like...
Lawyer, doctor.
Uh-huh, see, it's like the very basic stuff, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. I went the financial route thinking I would just always work in as a financial expert.
Okay.
Now in fintech, it's similar, pero yeah. it's not really being in finance or accounting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I went to...
So a young teenage, you didn't have... Mm-hmm. Any particular dreams of doing something outside of the norm?
No.
Okay. So where did that start to develop?
When I went to the Netherlands.
Okay.
When I went to the Netherlands for sure. When I went there, my first study was accounting.
Mm. So you were just going to continue what you started here?
Because that's what I knew.
Yeah.
I did not know more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to study accounting. And when I went there, I always thought that my Dutch was good. I don't know how. I think other people in the Caribbean experience the same thing. You think your Dutch is so good when you go to the Netherlands. But you get such a big slap. It's not a reality at all. So
yeah.
When I went there, and in the accounting study, you get like all this legal stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like complex language. So I stayed at that studio, I think, for maybe 3-4 months, mm-hmm. not more than 6 months for sure.
Yeah.
And then I dropped out, but mm-hmm. I didn't tell my mother that I dropped out. I literally lied to her, but I knew that she knew, but she just didn't want to tell me anything. But I.
So you guys were lying to each other.
Yeah, we were both lying to each other. So I was lying
but
to her.
But I mean, it's also beautiful that she didn't bust your pocket, and kind of gave you some space to figure it out.
And that's what I love so much about my mother, because maybe when I was living on Aruba, I was like walking into the path of the conventional path.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I always had my personality, and my personality was always, you can't tell me.
Unconventional.
Oh my God. My personality, it's still very unconventional. My mother, she could not tell me anything. She could not tell me anything. I would always do what I want, what mm-hmm. I feel like is best for me. Like, no one can tell me what I can do or what I cannot do. Like, no one.
But then somewhere in there, you were still a bit afraid of the unconventional choices, at least from a career perspective.
I think I was afraid of my mother, and I am still afraid of my mother. I am, like, I love her so much, and she means well for me, and I know she trusts me completely, and of course, like, she sees me like this, like, grown woman already doing her thing and being successful. But it's like the little things. So, like, on Instagram, I posted last time that I want to cut my hair, like, up to here. But I didn't receive the approval of my mother. And because I didn't receive her approval, I can't do it.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, so, yeah, I don't know if I have to say that I'm afraid of her or not, but there's something there. I need her approval for, so I don't know why.
Yeah.
But
we'll unpack that at another time.
Oh, Josie, I don't know. That's like a whole psychology session. I don't know what's going on there. No, pero when I was during my accountancy, I dropped out. We lied to each other. You know, we were living our best life. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, I was living in Leeuward.
Okay. Oh.
See, it's a nice city though. It's very small. It's cute. I loved it a lot. Like, a lot of students. And then I went to Amsterdam to live. So literally, spontaneously, I was like, you know what? I'm going there. I'm just going to work and just hope for the best.
Yeah.
So I worked in a restaurant, and then I just party, do my own thing, blah, blah, blah. And then I found an apartment in Rotterdam. And I lived in Rotterdam for 6 years, and then finished my study and worked there.
But which study was that?
I just asked. I'm like, it's so normal for me.
Because we just went from I dropped out of school, I was working and partying, and now I finished my study. Which study did you even pick up?
No, exactly. No, so I did international business and management.
Oh, okay.
With a specialization in business process management.
Oh, okay.
And that's how I got into technology. That, again, is that's why I trust my intuition, and I believe in manifestation a lot, is because during my specialization, we had the opportunity to do internship.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this list of companies you could do internship at.
Mm.
And I saw a specific company. At that time, it was called Central CIB, Central Inwarderingsbureau. It's an incasso. It's a debt collection company.
Okay.
So I saw that, and in my mind, because I always wanted to be in the financial industry, I saw that they were in the financial industry, but as a debt collection. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going there because I'm going to get a job there. And literally, I told the teacher, I want to go there. Two of my other friends were like, okay, Lucien, we're going with you. I went there. I worked there for, we had a project, which was to create an online platform for people to collect their debt. So for companies to collect their debt and for the debtors to pay their debt on that online platform. So I was like, okay, that's a project. I started working on the project. It was successful. And then after 6 months, we launched it to the market. And the owner of the company told me, okay, Lucien, would you like to stay? And I was like, oh my God, sure, you know, let's do it. So that's basically how I entered the tech industry. Of course, there's like a bunch more things that happened during my study at IBMS. Yeah. But that's my entry to the tech industry. But I don't know.
So then you spent 3 years working at that company?
See, I spent 3 years working in that company. My student life was amazing as well. Oof, my student life. Yeah, I don't know how you experienced it, but like back in the day when I was a student, everyone would tell me, oh my God, you have to enjoy your student life, blah, blah, blah.
You have to enjoy it.
Oh my God.
I enjoyed it to the fullest.
Yeah, me too. Like, ooh, like, wow. Like, the student life was...
I was a long-term student for some time.
Assume what is the fine long-term? Because...
Well, I went to the maximum that you could have been a student.
As you... Okay, now good. Now good for you. You enjoy your life. That's what matters, huh?
100%, 100%. Well, no, I did. I started in one study.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the first year, I realized that this really wasn't for me. But it was difficult for me to find other options.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually, I just kind of lingered around throughout mm-hmm. the second year.
See.
And then finally found the option
mm-hmm.
and switched to that. And then that one I completed.
Mm. And but, is it in UI UX? Because now you're working as a UI UXer, right?
Yeah, yeah. So so what I started in was actually software engineering. So
you're a software engineer.
No.
Okay.
Java, C++, low-level programming, uh-huh. the little circuit boards that go into washing machines.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, why am I doing this stuff? And then there was one subject that was web design.
Oh.
And then I came to life because now I could like
be creative
and code at the same uh-huh. time. So then your creations come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And that I found super interesting. So like across the board, I think I got sixes, maybe sevens or whatever mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. first year. Mm-hmm. But for web design, I got a 9.5.
Oh, wow.
So that already stood out to me. Mm-hmm. And then they developed a new study
mm-hmm.
that was called ICT Media Design. Mm, uh-huh. In some other places, they call it Communication Media uh-huh, Design. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But at that time, it was brand new. Because
uh-huh, uh-huh.
I'm OG, right? So
OG. I like how you put it. You're OG. I'm going to start using that. I'm OG. Don't ask me my age.
So at the time, shit, I lost my train of thought.
ICT media was new.
Yeah. ICT media was new. But when I first moved, I was studying in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very international environment. Mm-hmm. But then when they started that study, it was only in Dutch.
Yeah.
And I was, because I moved around a lot mm-hmm. in my earlier days. And I finished high school in English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I the last time I had Dutch was like in the first mm-hmm. year of high school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so I felt a bit insecure mm-hmm, about switching mm-hmm. back to then doing my full education mm-hmm, in Dutch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it told me like this study doesn't have any exams. So it's just it's practical work and projects.
Basically
you're graded on your results. I was like, okay, I think I could manage that.
Mm-hmm.
I did ICT media design and then graduated from that. And actually during my final internship is when I started Antonio Media, mm-hmm. my mm-hmm. current company, mm-hmm. which a few weeks ago was 15 years ago.
Oh, whoa. Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow. Very nice. Oof, respect, because having a company so long is not a joke, no? I don't know if people realize it, but it's not a joke.
Not a joke.
So congrats. It's not a joke. Oof, very good.
I remember when I first started and I went to my very first network event,
mm-hmm.
which for me was also throwing me completely out of my comfort
mm-hmm.
zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until that point, I was used to just mm-hmm. being in the Caribbean communities mm-hmm. and not really interacting.
See.
Deeply within the Dutch communities,
mm-hmm.
but then all of a sudden, because we live in Eindhoven,
mm-hmm.
so down in the south, then I had to have my first interactions mm-hmm. with like Dutch professionals and entrepreneurs, ondernemers, mm-hmm. and I remember feeling super uncomfortable in those places, especially because I was the only one of
a little bit more color
of caramel. But that was stepping out your comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
And then the first one, actually, my wife, then girlfriend, had mm-hmm. joined me at that mm-hmm. first one.
Mm-hmm.
But shortly after that, I just started going to more and more. And at mm-hmm. some point, then people were like, I see you everywhere.
Like, what? What is up with this guy? Huh? You're interesting.
I just started going to everything because, uh-huh. Also getting the mentors and stuff from online. You're like, mm-hmm. wherever... You have to be in it to win it.
Literally.
And it's mm-hmm. not about who you know, but who knows you.
Humble.
And if you aren't in the right places, then you aren't meeting the right people, and then the right people aren't getting to know you and don't know where to find you, etc. So I spend a lot of time doing that. But now we get inside tracked to talking about me.
It's interesting though, because that's how we met on social media. Yeah. But I was intrigued by your page because of the podcast, but because as well at the UI UX side.
Yeah. There's,
and because we have a tech community, so I would say, oh wow, nice, interesting, you know. So yeah. So.
And I actually don't really post as much about what we really do on UI UX side. Mm. It's because a lot of our recent projects are all under NDAs. So it makes it a lot more tricky for me to
see. No, 100%.
For me to talk about the epic stuff that we do.
No, I understand. But do you work on like mobile applications or like more web applications?
Recently, it's a lot more web applications. But very complex web applications.
Are they like softwares or actual like websites?
It's more software.
More software.
So we do websites
as well.
We do websites as well, but it's like a very small part of the business in comparison to the web application.
Good, nice.
And the web applications we work with, like we've recently done a pretty huge project where we completely revamped an entire design system.
Nice.
The design system supports about, I think at the moment, 10 fixed applications. Mm-hmm. And that number is quickly growing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those applications, well, the largest application has about... And these are internal applications. The largest application has about 15 or 16,000 users.
Oh, lo.
3,000 unique users per day.
Nice, nice.
So those 2,000 to 3,000 persons basically don't have work if the application doesn't work.
And how long was your project? Was that project? Because I work on a project as well for replatforming it completely to Vue.js. Like my manager at that time was like, Lucien, you have to do this in like 6 months. I'm like, meneer.
Dat gaat niet.
Dat gaat niet worden. So that's why I'm asking, like, how long was it?
These projects are still ongoing. How you say that? So you basically work till a particular milestone. And then once you reach that milestone, then new milestones may be defined or not defined. That huge one is a pretty big application, and it continues to evolve in the type of processes that have to connect to it. Okay, so it also has like a very deep integration side.
Nice.
But I think we might be going too much off topic on the... So we'll jump back. But that's the tech in us.
We can
talk about that off camera. So going back to you.
Yes.
And the career so after you wrap things up in the Netherlands, you move back to Aruba.
Si.
What triggered you to come back home?
Of course, like a lot of people that I know that are living on Aruba and in this moment is because of COVID. So for me, it was the same thing. COVID hit. I graduated. After I graduated, of course, I had my job. So I'm very grateful for that. That gave me like a lot of opportunities. I think I learned there the most where I ever learned like hard skills wise.
Yeah.
On Aruba or Caribbean, it's more soft skills. I feel like hard skills as well, but you learn to maneuver around the politics of everything. But so I came to Aruba because of COVID, and
but why actually?
See, so I had,
because you say that a lot of people move because of COVID.
So for me, it was a little bit more deep because in that moment, I had very bad depression. Very, very bad depression. Like coming from the Caribbean, you wouldn't think, you don't believe, for me then, I didn't believe depression existed. I never comprehended depression. I know that you can be sad and those type of things, but even sadness wasn't like such an intense and immense feeling. It was just a feeling and then it just goes away. I don't know. And especially on Aruba, like our slogan is One Happy Island, so you're always happy. So when the depression hit me, oof, it was so hard. I really felt like my world was ending. The world was coming on top of me. I felt like I wanted to do things to myself that I didn't want to do, but the thoughts just came on my mind.
Yeah.
And I battled for it for 1.5 years by myself and during COVID as well.
So then that was... So all in 2021, you were still in the Netherlands.
See, I came in 2022, I think.
Mm-hmm.
See, 2022, And so the depression hit me hard in combination with COVID, you know, isolating myself, not having anyone. It was a little bit too much for me.
Yeah.
Because before COVID... I worked normally at Cedra and did my thing, went out with my friends, and everything was fine. But the isolation and the combination of depression, that was like the perfect recipe for me to come back home.
Yeah.
So I came back home and I dealt with my depression for 6 more months, but afterwards it went. It's like I had to be home.
Yeah.
I really had to be home.
Well, that sun rises every day and greets you.
See, no, and just like the weather.
You can hop in the car and go to that crystal blue water.
No, literally. So, yeah,
It's a depression cure.
It really helped me. So I came back to Aruba, and then thank God I still was working with a company from the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be more integrated within the Aruban community. So before I came, I was so desperate to come to Aruba. I was like, I'm willing to find any job. I don't care. Hey, literally, I started applying to every type of job position you could find online. Receptionist, hotel, cleaner, waitress, everything. Even though I have my bachelor's, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to come to Aruba. I don't care the job that I'm going to work at. I don't care. I just need to come. Thank God my company at that time told me, yes, you can still work remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was living in the Netherlands, I applied to a position at my previous employer. And just an open position. No, I think it was a receptionist or something position. I applied, and the CIO looked at my resume, and he was like, you know, you're not qualified.
Overqualified.
I didn't want to use, you know, any type of, you know. But
I mean, I think that's a regular thing that we face in the Caribbean. See. Like, you either not get to the job or you overqualified.
See, exactly. So for me, it was the same. So I was overqualified, of course, for that position. And he actually told me, Lucien, you know what? We have a few projects in the department, the mortgage department, that maybe is interesting to you. So within that department, I was then responsible for digitalizing it to have a more automated mortgage systems between each other. But we separated between three projects. So we had like a legacy system implemented, and we were building a loan origination system as well as different dashboards. Yeah. So those were like the three projects I was working on in that moment. And afterwards, too. I moved on, and now I'm where I'm currently at. But that's basically my transition from the Netherlands to Aruba, mainly because of depression and COVID, and I had to come back and just not deal with...
Reconnect.
See, no. Mm-mm.
Well, I could definitely understand. COVID was a very tough time for everyone, and I think many people that never felt any type of depression probably had some type of depression symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I know I even felt certain things during that time that had me like, whoa, this is unfamiliar territory, especially if you always have been upbeat and go-getting person. Yeah, certain amount of freedoms definitely got taken away.
See.
But how would you say... So throughout your career, whether it's here in Aruba or in the Netherlands or even before you went to the Netherlands, how would you say your Caribbean roots have influenced your way of doing business?
You know, I think for me, I'm Caribbean raised,
mm-hmm.
but I believe that my personality in the work sphere
mm-hmm.
is, can I say, not Caribbean?
Okay.
I feel like I am more Western in my way of working.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you, what do you qualify as like having Caribbean qualities and defining us as your roots in the work sphere?
Well, it's more about like if you link back to your upbringing and the elements of your upbringing, because you have Caribbean roots.
Sí.
But technically, interestingly enough, because
mm-hmm.
now when I think about it, you were born in the Netherlands. So you're
My four years, that
structural 4 years was over there, and then you came over mm-hmm. to the Caribbean mm-hmm. and developed stronger roots, because mm-hmm. obviously during your formative years, mm-hmm. your teenage years, mm-hmm. you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned that you feel that they are more Western because you feel that certain parts of your way of doing business doesn't quite fit in with the regular Caribbean context?
Yeah, I do feel like that's the thing. I don't really want to say that. That's why I really want to understand, like, what does it qualify to have like Caribbean roots? Because there are Caribbean people that are very much go-getter,
mm-hmm.
but there is a stigma on Caribbean people. Like when I was working in the Netherlands, I did have some comments where, like, you know, like Caribbean people are lazy, you know? So that's why I say that I'm not sure if I am the typical Caribbean person when it comes to work. I'm very much Western. And why I say I'm much Western is because, one, the way that I communicate, I am very, very direct. Mm. And they always compare my way of communicating with the Dutch standards. And I do understand it. Because one, when you start working for the first time, the people that you work with predominantly defines your career.
Yeah.
So I started my career in the Netherlands, and the people I work with was very much Dutch.
Mm.
So they formed a way of communicating to their style, and I continued with it throughout my career up until now. Right now, that I'm like 3 or 4 years on Aruba, I'm starting to adjust it a little bit
mm-hmm.
To the standard of Aruba. For example, like on Aruban people are not very direct. Like in Curacao, they're more direct than Aruba. But on Aruba, if something is blue, you don't tell that person that the thing is blue.
Okay.
You beat around the bush. You beat around the bush so much, and that's what I had to learn.
Mm.
The social politics and the corporate politics when it comes to communication.
Yeah.
So how my Caribbean roots really defined my career, it's very difficult for me to say because...
Or maybe you're in the process of discovering it.
See, I think, yeah, that's, yeah. And communication is one thing.
Yeah.
Communication is definitely one thing. And I don't even want to say work ethic, because I don't want to put specific stigma on Caribbean people either,
I don't agree with those BS statements.
See, exactly, me neither. That's why I don't. Uh-huh.
Because in general, many Caribbean people have to work, in some cases, even harder than the average mm-hmm. person in Western countries mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. of the limitations mm-hmm. that we have here mm-hmm. In the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those stigmas come from all type of outdated
beliefs or behaviors.
And so I don't subscribe to none of those.
No, me neither.
Because in general, at least what I know from St. Martin mm-hmm. and then also what I've seen and experienced mm-hmm. in some of the other mm-hmm. islands, sometimes people have to have more than just their core job mm-hmm. to be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that person inherently can't be lazy if they're working more than just that one job.
Mm-hmm.
I would even go as far as to say the average Caribbean person that's out there working hard, that's one of the things that we're taught.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to study, you have to think, you have to work hard. So it's also ingrained in us. But working hard doesn't always get you the best results. Working smart and strategic delivers you the best results.
100%.
And that's something that we're not necessarily taught.
Very good.
And a lot of those folks in higher places, they get taught more how to work strategic and things and not have to work hard. So what is the definition of working hard? Because working the long hours and going the extra mile is something that in general inherently we're used to.
Yeah, it's actually very beautiful that you said it that way. I had a conversation yesterday or 2 days ago with my mother, and I asked her, because as I mentioned to you, like, I think outside of this podcast, I'm now very much interested in corporate and social politics.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew it existed, but I was faced with certain confrontations that I had to adapt my ways of working.
Yeah.
So I told my mother, "Mommy, why is it?" Because I come from a working class family, and I asked her, like, now I'm hanging out with different people on the island as compared to when I was living here.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that certain people that are not in the working class, that has more success, if you can define it with financial terms, on the island, you can see that they are not defined as Arubans. They're either Latin people or other ethnicities, etc. You can see that the way that they move in social politics on the island is insane. And I asked my mother, "Mommy, why is it when I used to come to you with a problem or I wanted some advice from you, you would tell me, 'No, don't worry with them. Just leave it, you know? Just make sure you do your own thing.' But when I speak to my friends now, they tell me, it's not that you don't have to worry with it. You just have to re-strategize and adapt to their way of working, behaving, and thinking. And then work hard until you get what you want."
Yeah.
But my mother always used to tell me that just, you don't need them. But no, you do need them. And you have to adapt your way of working.
Can I unpack something
Dali, do
it. Should I go there?
Yeah, go there.
Well, your mom wouldn't know how to give you the advice of the things that she hasn't experienced. Because you just use a key word there, that you came from a working class family, right? So her experience and knowledge and wisdom on particular subjects only goes as far as what her experience knows. And now you're treading new territories, walking into different types of rooms, and you're being exposed to things that she's never been exposed to. So she wouldn't be able to give you advice on how to operate in those settings.
Exactly.
And you need to go look for... come into my next question. Mentors.
Yes. Ooh.
And persons that can help you navigate these new spaces. Who would you say has been some of your mentors on your journey?
Well, I had different mentors. Now that all of them were male mentors. Why male mentors, and why I'm saying that specifically is because now that I was always in a male-dominated industry. But when you were working in the Netherlands, there was more equality compared to the islands. On the islands, they say there is equality, but within the corporate environment, the equality is not there. It's unspoken, but it's still there.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm putting emphasis on male mentors. And right now I'm focused more on embracing female leaderships and having female mentors and hearing experiences from female executives and those type of things. But the male mentors that I had in the past were mostly mentors or people that had a lot of experience with social and corporate politics.
Okay.
a lot of experience.
And, but specifically in Aruba or also in the Netherlands?
See, in the Netherlands, Aruba and in the States. So, but he was a Jamaican living in the States. But
you lived in the States?
No, but online, no? Oh, online.
Online. Yeah, then you gotta contextualize it.
So the mentors were online.
Yeah.
Online or in person as well. But the one in the States was online.
Okay.
Yeah, so they gave me a bunch of advice with regards to how to behave in a corporate environment. For example, like when you go to an interview, what you should do and what you should not do.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned before, right now I know how to maneuver my way around the Aruban community.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I didn't know, and how I used to act with regards to my body language and my way of communicating is I would be very direct and I wouldn't smile a lot. I would just be, you know,
yeah.
Okay, you tell me what you need to tell me, and I tell you what I need to tell you, and then we get it done, and then we move on with our business, you know?
Yeah.
But I remembered this person told me, Lucian, please remember to smile in interviews. I did not smile. It's something that is so, it's eeny meeny, it's simple.
Yeah.
Very simple, but it's very powerful. Like, your smile is so powerful because you make people feel that they are valued, that they're recognized, and that they are welcomed. Yeah. Welcome in your energy.
Yeah.
So, and so mentors help you a lot. It can be like the big things, the smaller things, you know, big things is like...
So, give me one example of a key thing. That was game changing for you, that you got from a mentor.
Do you want like the sneaky advices or like the good? Because there's like a bunch of sneaky advices I received in politics. Because you have to learn to play the game.
Okay. Which one you want to give? Which one?
I feel like the PG-13 one.
The PG-13 one? Okay, then go ahead.
So for the PG-13 one, this is something, again, now that I know, it's very self-explanatory, but you have to get a sponsor. Within a company.
Yeah.
You have to get a sponsor.
So basically someone that's in a higher position.
In a higher position.
If you want to get particular things done within corporate.
They can vouch for you.
Yeah.
That you need a sponsor. So there was a period within my corporate career that I was having a lot of difficulties. And I was explaining to my mentor, the one in the States. And he told me, Lucian, it sounds like you don't have a sponsor.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Did you know what a sponsor was?
No, he explained it to me.
Okay.
I didn't know what a sponsor was.
Yeah.
And then he explained it to me. And then I was like, oh, okay. But it was a very straightforward advice, get a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not easy to get a sponsor either.
True.
Because to get a sponsor, you have to build a relationship.
Yep. And a relationship is not built in a day, not built in a week, not built in a month.
It takes time, it takes patience, and it takes for both parties to trust each other.
Yeah.
And trust is not something that you can have from one day to the other.
Nope.
And especially in the corporate environment, it's very difficult to trust. So I don't really use the word trust as much. What I believe in now is transactional relationships.
Mutual benefits. Yeah.
What can you get out of me and what can I get out of you? And everything.
Yeah.
That's what I believe in. So my road to getting a project sponsor was very long, very hard. It took a lot of work and determination to get one. I don't say that I have one right now. But I am way further than where I was.
Okay.
Awesome. 2 years ago. So yeah.
Then we'll leave the sneaky advice for a follow up in the future.
No, because that's too too rated R. We call it like the Jaka moves. I don't know, like the rat moves.
Jaka moves.
Jaka is like a rat. It's a rat.
Okay, Jaka is a rat.
So you have to be a rat, you know.
All right, so if we rewind the clock one more time, mm-hmm. and we go back to a 18-year-old
mm-hmm.
18-year-old Lucien,
mm-hmm.
with all of your jacka moves.
No. Oh, Dios, no. I don't want to be known for the jacka moves. You better not make a clip out of that, babe. Make a clip of something else.
Jacka. Okay, so with all of your mentorship advice, work experience, career, education, etc., what advice would you give an 18-year-old Lucienne?
Mm-hmm. I would tell Lucienne just remain feisty. Mm. Remain feisty and continue being focused. And stay authentic to who you are as a person. Because when you start working and you get mixed up, again, I mentioned politics, but politics right now is a big part of my life. And I want people to know, I think if I want to give someone something from this podcast, is to learn more about corporate and social politics. Mm. If you're not in a corporate environment right now, learn about social politics, because it will get you so far in life, more than your hard skills will ever get you far in. But be your authentic self.
Yeah.
And be your authentic self whilst knowing how to find the balance between all the politics around you, and never lose your authenticity, because that is your key in succeeding in everything that you want, your authenticity, because no one is like you. You're unique. So stay feisty, stay with your attitude, and at the end of the day, I read an article last time that a lot of companies actually want divas in the workplace, because the divas are the ones that set the standard for a project, and people have to adhere to that standard. So if you want quality work, hire a diva.
Hire a diva.
Okay? So if you didn't know, now you know.
Oh, this one we could use for a clip.
Yeah, not the jack one. Work,
hire a diva.
No.
Awesome. So you got any more closing nuggets for us? Closing words?
Closing words. I would say, one key takeaway was politics, either corporate or social politics. But I would say as well, LinkedIn, and start putting yourself out there. LinkedIn has done so much for me, so much.
Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I've received many different projects from LinkedIn. The two jobs that I worked at, I got from LinkedIn. I got speaking engagements from LinkedIn. I went to speak in Colombia because of LinkedIn. I give workshops right now. I'm going to St. Martin as well. Maybe I already went to St. Martin, but I'm going to St. Martin to participate in a workshop there, and then hosting my own workshop here on Aruba.
Was connections through LinkedIn?
Connections through LinkedIn and building your own personal brand on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So the second thing then to leave behind is position yourself on LinkedIn. Write about literally anything that you feel. LinkedIn is not like so as scary as you think it is.
Yeah.
Write about anything and everything, and see where your journey takes you.
Awesome.
So
awesome.
Yeah. Yay.
Thank you very much for coming out so last minute. But
thank you for having me.
Somewhere we had to keep it on a Caribbean vibe.
Uh-huh. Exactly, literally.
We had to keep that element in there.
Jesus.
And funny enough, you did mention it on here, but you did mention that you actually were that you were manifesting this to happen as well.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. Like, my intuition is so strong. It's so strong. I literally, because I hope when this podcast goes live, I'm already in the St. Martin market. But I want to enter the St. Martin. I am expanding to the St. Martin market. I am expanding to the St. Martin market. Yes.
To manifest, it's going to happen.
I'm already there. Yeah. In two weeks, I'm there. So I'm in the St. Martin market, and I wanted to get more visibility there. So I want to be on your podcast. And I told the person, I want to come on this podcast. And then, I don't know how, but then you messaged me. I was like, oh my God, this cannot be real. My intuition is so strong. So I hope it tells me one day, like, you're going to win the lottery or something. Because I'm ready. I've been ready.
Well, I can also tell you that when we were busy planning out this trip, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, I got a mm-hmm. list of persons that mm-hmm. I want to interview. Mm-hmm. Well, my wife gives mm-hmm. also gives me suggestions mm-hmm. because she's from Aruba, so she knows mm-hmm. more of the persons. Mm-hmm. But then the persons that I actually had interactions mm-hmm. with, then you were one of those on the mm-hmm. list as well. So mm-hmm. it's just always nice to see when things happen in alignment, and see. Also when both sides are thinking about making those connections, and mm-hmm. then they happen.
See, exactly.
So it again proves that anything is possible, anything mm-hmm. can happen at mm-hmm. any given moment.
See.
So yeah, once again, thanks for being here.
Thank and you.
And you mentioned LinkedIn, social media, Instagram. Mm-hmm. Where can people mm-hmm. find you?
Yeah, so predominantly on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. If you want to know anything related to what I do in my career, which is being a product owner, I didn't think I mentioned that, but did you mention that? I don't know.
I did.
Did you mention it a little bit?
I think I did mention it a little bit, no? But we See. Didn't expand no, on no. it, yeah.
But if you want to know what I do as a product owner or as a project tech lead or anything related to technology or implementation of softwares, you can find me on LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn the most, and under Lucien Laclay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, normal. And Instagram is Lucien Laclay as well, but that is more like the diva side of me.
Okay.
And just showing off.
Well, that's where you hire the diva.
See, that's where, literally, that is where you hire the diva. No, but yeah, LinkedIn, Lucien
okay.
Laclay.
Okay, awesome. And we'll put all the links in the description below so you guys can check it out.
See.
Yeah, thank you mm-hmm. once again.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for tuning in. It's been another amazing episode here in the one happy island of Aruba. Meeting all the happy folks, but intelligent folks, mm-hmm. amazing folks, folks with great, interesting stories mm-hmm. and that mindset elevation. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know more, you're going to have to subscribe. Mm-hmm. If you want to see more, you're gonna have to like, so then it also suggests the videos to all your like-minded individuals. And please drop some comments, let us know any questions that we might have missed out or questions that you might have for Lucien. Yeah, and with that being said, thanks again for tuning in. See you in the next one. Bless.
Bye.